as much as anything else characterizes our own efforts at Bible study is the effort of definition. Because everywhere we go for help, that is, the books we turn to, are so often ethereal. They make very lovely statements, but it's something to get that down into their life, you see, to use it, work with it. And we've been working on the subject of love, and universally, books on love will cover, first, the grandness of God's love, secondly, the sacrifices of the love of Christ, thirdly, the obligations that we have to love, and fourthly, the search for that love via spiritual exercises, you see. That's the gamut. People say, well, I don't really love God enough, and I don't love my wife enough, or my husband, or whatever. And what is the response? Well, there's something wrong in your life. You need to get it straightened out. You need to pray and ask the Lord to give you love. Now, that cycle has gone on for hundreds of years in the church. And as long as I've been alive, as long as I've seen Christian people, which has been a vast number in every part of the world, practically, I've never found anybody successfully handling it, in a consistent way. Sure, people can have some ecstatic experience and run around and hug everybody, but they still fight at home. Fight's a little heavy, but still they have trouble loving somebody. And I know lots of people that have gone to the age of 60 or 70 or 75 and been Christians all their life, and good Christians. Christians have been committed to Christ and so forth, and still act so badly that people don't like them, and still have problems liking other people. So these emotions, these feelings of ours are a perennial problem, and any effort to try to resolve emotional problems by spiritual exercises is likely to be disappointing. And people struggle with that. They have guilt feelings about it. But I've rarely seen anything on the subject that doesn't leave it pretty much in the stratosphere. Now, of course, you read books by the scores of the Eastern mystics that do about the same thing with it. You read through the Vedas and so forth, and you find how nice it is to love one another and to do things for people and so forth and so forth. But how do we handle this beast of the emotion, the feeling? What do we do with that? Now, another reason why I choose to get more technical about it and more thorough about it is that we're in a different position today than they were in the days when the Bible was written, for several reasons. First of all, people today are far more control of their own lives. By that I mean we are not regimented as they were in those days. We have far more choices to make personally that they could not make then. For example, in terms of government, in the days the Bible was written, there were very few societies that were not pretty totally regimented, and people didn't have a whole lot of choice. And for example, even in the Roman society, where there was a republic and there was a representative kind of government, if not a democracy, democratic process. But here you had the large slave population, and in the Bible it says to the slaves, do what your master tells you. There was no question of saying, if you really want to be a good Christian, get out from under your slavery and don't be beholden to anybody. If you're converted as a slave, don't try to be free. If you're converted as a free man, on the other hand, don't feel that you've got to become a slave. But anyway, the society was regimented. But now, in the matter of feelings, in the matter of love, for example, marriages were arranged for the most part. You had very few marriages that were based upon some romantic interactions. Romance in marriage is a relatively late development. In almost all other societies, in the Latin society, for example, even now, far more than our society, but in Latin society, always in the Middle East, probably even to the present, pretty much into the present time. Certainly, decidedly in the days that the Bible was written, mother and father usually, or a matchmaker, or whatever, marriage was arranged, and you just took the person and did the best you could with it. Well, nobody talked about how to have a happy home in those days by, in terms of romantic love. you just did your job, you were fulfilled your obligations and tried to stick it out. So a lot of the things, and on the other hand, people didn't know as much about things as they do today. Now that may not have been a disadvantage. But today people are very super aware in fields of science and fields of psychology, for example. One reason I have to spend so much time going into that is because you've got so many cockamamie ideas coming in from psychology, and you've got Christian people who may not really be qualified writing books on psychology and writing books that are just rankly misleading, rabidly bad. I don't mean just moderately bad, bad. And yet they're circulated universally in the church as great material. I'm not going to name any names whatsoever, but I'm going to say any effort to come up with a text or a Christian book on how to classify people has got to be about as rank as anything you can put out. It just violates all the laws of good sense as well as of standard scientific investigation. I mean, if you want to treat psychology as a science, and most of these books don't, most of them handle it very carelessly, but even if you know, if you're going to say, let's take the parts of psychology that are scientific or more or less scientific, of course, psychologists like to say it's all scientific. That's not really true. There are elements in the subject of psychology that are more or less scientifically valid investigation, such as the relationship between the biological factors and the psychological and so forth. The endocrine gland system, for example, the nervous system, the brain, all of these are pretty substantially developed from a scientific point of view. Where the great field of problem is in psychology is the therapy side of it. That's where you get way out in left field and get way away from any kind of scientific validation. Even observations about behavior are very sketchy and undependable because you just have so little way of controlling. You see, in the laboratory, well, even, for example, in the matter of glands, you can determine the levels of certain hormones in the system, for example, by valid tests. These things are pretty standard and pretty verifiable, levels of endocrine, of hormones, for example, which are the endocrine secretions. And the many things about the relationship between the physiology and the psychology of the human person are pretty substantial. But now when you get into trying to classify behavior, you see, then you're in trouble. And when one comes out, or one's come out with the material that tried to help you say, this is this type of person, and this is how you deal with them, and this is this type of person. It's even bad psychology, you see. The more deeply the science of psychology is pursued, the less differentiation there is. For example, in the old days, they used to take the concept of schizophrenia. And they classified hebephrenia, for example, which is going back to childhood, and catatonic, and so forth and so forth. And they had all these classifications. Now it's generally just called undifferentiated schizophrenia. You see, they don't go into the class because they've discovered you can't go into the classification. Well, now, late as usual, come the theologians to make their classifications. This is this kind of person, this is this kind of person. And Christian people read that. And they, oh yeah, that sounds just like my husband, you know, and, or that's like, well, never like yourself, but it's my auntie or grandmother or pastor. That's just the kind of person they are, see, but we just don't know those kinds of things. A lot of bad materials come out in the name of psychological considerations, but this is one reason why, sometimes I have to get into it a little more technically because we've got an awful lot of misinformation going out today. Then you have the theologians who totally set aside any kind of a consideration of psychology, any kind of an analysis of the brain and nervous system and so forth as diabolical, and they don't get into that at all. So what they do then is just lay out all of these lovely ethereal ideas about love, and they don't understand anything of what they're talking about. And so they people get on a guilt trip. But I'm talking to you very freely and very openly here. just coming from my heart. This may not sound to you like Bible study, but it is very much Bible study because I'm trying to take the words. You know, when I spend 6 weeks on one word, I want you to understand what's going on. And this matter of feelings is one of the biggest areas of distress and of misinformation and abuse in all of Christendom. And generally speaking, everything is classified under love, you know. And by love, we just mean happy feelings and ebullience and all of these things. And we feel that, oh, God has really visited us if everyone runs around hugs each other. And that has nothing to do whatsoever with the love of God. Not anything to do with the love of God. It has to do with natural, human, emotional expressions. And the problem with that is that people who don't feel like that then are put on a guilt trip to say, well, I guess I don't love people because I don't feel like I want to turn and hug the person next to me or even shake hands, maybe. The effort to try to promote a feeling thing without ever defining or understanding what feelings really are, after all, has caused a lot of mischief. I can talk to you about this tonight. I'm not sure tapes should go out, even, because I've just always been reluctant about the tapes because I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm doing. I don't want anybody necessarily, nobody has to judge what I'm doing. I mean, they don't, we even have to listen to it, and I'm not putting what I'm saying out for public assessment. It doesn't matter whether they like what I say or not. But what I'm trying to do desperately is to help people understand faith deeply enough that they can function with it, see? I want you to be able to live it. If I just say to you, go out and love one another, you don't know anything about what I mean. Unless I get down to cases. I've been doing a lot of writing on the subject, and it's fresh in my mind, but we've come up against it right here in Romans 13, where he says, go out and love your neighbors. And so I started down that tack last week, but I'm still dissatisfied with where I left it, so I'm going to talk some more about it tonight. And to try and get a handle on something here. Because we have to differentiate between our feelings about God, for example, what we feel about God, and what is the true love of God within us. The English word love is just a miserable instrument. Because when I even say love, it conjures up 100 different meanings, and all of it pretty much relegated to the feeling thing. So now I have to ask the question, I'm going to try to deal with it in this book that's coming up. What are feelings? Person says to me, well, I know I ought to love God, but I just can't seem to muster it up, or I know I ought to love my neighbor, but I not to dislike people, but I can't control my feelings. So the first question I have to ask is, what are feelings? What are we dealing with? Oh, in the days the Bible was written, they didn't talk like this because they didn't know these things. You say, well, then they didn't have the problems we do. No, they didn't have the problems, and they weren't getting their brain all fouled up with it. But you see, if you're in a Greek society, and you read a statement here that says you are to have agape for people, that says something. It says, does not say affection. It does not say go and throw your arms around somebody. It just says care. You know, care. So we say, well, caring is a feeling too. Well, it may look like that on the surface. We'll get at that. But as we're having trouble because we're looking at English concepts. So you say, well, they didn't have to do this in Paul's day. Why didn't Paul write dissertations on the psychology of affection? Well, because the words he used meant something in those days that they don't mean today. And I can just hear some, when this book comes out, I can just hear some people snorting over there. I don't want to hear psychology, you know. I just want the old love of Jesus. You know? Well, okay, I don't mean to put Jesus down, but I mean the word love is a total waste in the American language, the English language. I say American because it's even more of a wasteland in America than in England. And so people are under guilt feelings and they're stumbling over it. So we'll look at it and we'll say, what are feelings? And I have to say to you at this point that the essential meaning of feelings is sense experience coming to the brain from the external environment, which means from anything outside of you. Sensory data. Now, sensory data has to do with the sense experiences of the nervous system. You've got thousands, you've got millions and millions of nerve endings that touch the external environment. By external environment, I mean everything around you. I mean things you feel and hear and see and touch. All of that's the external environment. It is, in fact, a technical term, although I'm not trying to be technical. You have the SR formula, stimulation response formula, which includes the idea that from the external environment, the sense receptors receive data. It is integrated in the cortex, and it is expressed in sense effectors. So you have sense receptors, which are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the nerve endings in the skin, so forth. You have the sense effectors, which are the ways that we can move and express ourselves with the human body. But that's just a technicality. So what I gave it to you only to say to you what I'm saying is not just about air. It's not just my ideas about life. This much is fairly standard and well-established psychological theory. Remember what I said to you. There's nothing wrong with the study of psychology. The problem is in the therapy, you see, the practice of it. That's where the trouble comes. But we've got to understand a little of this because of the way this has been used. That is, concepts of love, for example. The way it has been used and abused in Christian circles. So I'm getting at it by saying, you know, of course, we say, what is love? Well, by and large, love relates to feelings. And I'm trying to say, what are feelings? Okay? So, you have sense experiences. Anything that touches your skin or your person is a sense experience. For example, we feel cool air coming on us in some quarters here, not everywhere in Ohio. But we feel some cool air coming. That is sense experience. You sit on a chair. That is sense experience because data is coming in from all your nerve endings into your brain. If you touch a hot iron, that's a sense experience, and that pain is transferred from the iron to your brain, and a lot happens to it in the meantime. So now we're going to look at the things you can help and the things you can't help. Ways you can feel and ways you can't help feeling, you see. What is the difference between that which personally we are involved in our feelings about God and others, and what is it that is merely or that is more real in our spirit because God is there, then we have the capacity to express with human emotions. We can sort all this out. It doesn't need to be a mystery. The reason people can't handle emotions today is because it's a mystery. Because they see it as a mystery. Because love is some ethereal, mystical mystery that they don't understand, and so they let it go rampantly about loving whatever and not loving whatever without understanding why they love what they love and why they don't love what they don't love. See? And young people get tied up with people that they have no business getting tied up with, not because of any interpersonal interaction, but because of chemical vibrations or interactions, chemical energy flowing back and forth. See, hate and love can both be expressed, can both be energy expressions as much as a drug. Feelings of love or hate can affect you just as much as taking a pill of some kind. So a lot of people, what they call love is the Greek word eros. And of course, again, if we were all Greeks and you're reading the Bible as a Greek, it would make a lot more sense to you. That's why I've had to try to master the Greek language so I can come back to you and help you see these things. If you're in a Greek society and the speaker said eros, you'd know it just meant physical love, physical interaction. If we said phile, you know it would mean friendship, affection. If we said agape, you know it would mean caring, consideration, respect. But I'm trying to take that most abysmal and idiotic of all words in the English language, love. I'm trying to cut it apart and try to do something with it to help you know where you're at. And on the one hand, to get you off a guilt trip of thinking you have to force your feelings into some kind of a thing with God or with others. On the other hand, I want to help put you on a responsibility trip to show you that your feelings can be handled if you understand what feelings are all about. All of that is highly technical material. and may not sound like Bible study, but in the end, I think you'll appreciate your relationship to God more, and you'll be able to handle your relationship to other people more. Okay, so God, here are our feelings. Mostly love is disgust under the heading of feelings. But in reality, feelings are experiences of the brain. Now, we're talking about the natural person, and we've got to distinguish between our natural mind and the spirit, which is beyond the mind, and which is where God dwells, and which maintains the continuity and steadiness of our relationship. As you can go on steadily with God for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and even have your feelings all in a turmoil. And still God holds you steady. You can have bad marriages, you can have bad relationship with your families, you can have bad neighbors or anything else, and still move along. Still you are supported and sustained in your spirits by God. But you just have to understand and realize, I mean, any of you would say this. I don't think there'd be a person in the room that wouldn't admit to having problems in terms of human relationships. Liking people or not liking people, or relating to the property, or even your liking or not liking of God. We're not always in great sympathy with what God is doing. There are conflicts. I have said there are conflicts in any human relationship. If it's a genuine, vital relationship, not everybody thinks the same thing every minute of their relationship. And the more vital the relationship, the more sensitive we may be to differences and so forth. I've often said the reason families fight is because they care. It's that simple. So this is a natural flow of feeling, but everybody in Christendom has trouble with human relationships. Feelings are a pesky area for us. And even if we are able to, after we've got white hair and are more mild and mellow in our actions and so forth, even if we mellow out our actions, we still can't avoid the feelings. Now, people who try to control the feelings have got to look at that control from three different points of view. And if I say to you, control your feelings, I've got to enlighten you as to what we mean by control. Because control of feelings can either mean A, denying the feelings, which is a deception. A lot of people do that. They just keep the feelings out of the way and they deny them. And that's deception. Or B, they can mask the feeling for the sake of not hurting somebody, and maybe that's just discretion. Maybe sometimes that's important and wise to do. You don't want to put your feelings out on your sleeve all the time. You would needlessly hurt a lot of people. And maybe frankness may be too much sometimes, and maybe you need to sort of mask things just to... That isn't hypocritical. It's not hypocrisy to keep from calling somebody a red-nosed baboon. But you mask the feeling, and you don't. It doesn't mean to mask the feeling. Doesn't mean that you put on a phony smile and go up and act like a politician, like they do in church. You know, everybody's a greeter. You know, and they don't even care whether you. I mean, they care that they've got another number on the roll, but they don't really care all that much about you. They just smile sweetly. Oh, we're so glad to have you in church. They don't even know you. Maybe you're a communist that's going to cause an uprising in the church. What I'm saying is it's phony to act very ebullient to people and not to mean it. That's phony. And to mask what might otherwise be some kind of negative feeling. Because we have negative feelings about people without even knowing why. And without any provocation. There are just some people that sort of give off negative vibes and we don't know them at all. And we have to assess whether those negative vibes are sound or not. But anyway, when we talk about masking feelings, I'm not talking about being phony, but being discreet. So part of control might be discretion. On the other hand, control might involve perception. That means understanding the feelings and learning to handle them on the terms of priorities and compatibilities. Now, what I mean by that is this. There are some people whose priorities are different enough from yours that you will never please them. For example, if you have a circle of friends that are into the drug thing, there's no way that you can be compatible with that circle of friends. You can care about them. But the feelings of mutuality that you once had when you were into the scene are not going to remain when you get out of that. The same thing is true in terms of husbands and wives. There's a level to which you cannot extend camaraderie when it comes into conflict with priorities. You can be kind and gracious, but you may not be as one. Now, I've been in many situations where just talked with many couples where they got along a lot better before they became Christians because they had a focus of priorities that was earthly and worldly, and they both headed for that goal. You know, it was an earthly goal, and then one of them becomes a Christian, and that changes because the priorities have changed. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be unkind to them, but you may not be able to have the same camaraderie, you see. So when I say controlling the affections or the emotions, now we have to look at the idea of understanding where those feelings are. Now, again, if somebody is mistreating you, you can't say that you like them to mistreat you. If they mistreat you enough, it may squeeze out affection. And now you care about them, but you don't like them very well. I gave you last week the primary example, which is Jesus himself, of the situation where you dislike someone very much, but you care about them in terms of their needs or their soul. And that was like Jesus with the Pharisees. The Pharisees were mistreating God's people. And Jesus called them snakes. See? He didn't even mask his feelings for them. He disliked them intensely. But he wept over them as he prayed for them when he was praying for Jerusalem. He was sorry that they acted the way they did, but there was no way he could say that he liked them. So when you talk about control, you've got a lot of things to look at here, and it isn't just a matter of saying, well, we don't love people very much, let's have a revival meeting. That's the standard practice. My wife and I are fighting, we don't like each other very much, let's go forward in the altar. Now, it may be that by getting in touch with Christ, you can get in touch with who you are and what you're doing, but you're not going to get Christ to put a color coat of plaster over your orneriness and make you go around hugging each other. If your wife or husband doesn't like you, maybe it's because you're not behaving yourself. See? All right, that's the matter of control. But now we come to what is feeling in the first place. I want to show you how essential it is that the feelings of the natural mind, of the flesh, are distinct from the sensitivities of the spirit per se. Because if they were not, the Bible would be a totally unrealistic appraisal of human relationships or our relationship to God. Because there are some things that are established premises. The brain does not always function the same. And there are many things that have to do with our brain function that make quite radical differences from one person to the other. Some people, for example, are very easily hurt. They're hypersensitive people. That is not something that is a spiritual matter. That's something that is part of their heredity or acquisition or both. Their feelings are easily hurt. Even the Lord hurts their feelings. That's right. There are people hypersensitive and they pray and they don't get quite what they think they should have and they're hurt at the Lord. Now to say the person that is very open and easygoing and so forth has achieved a greater spiritual level is just idiocy. Rank idiocy. Or ignorance or something or both. All right, so the brain reacts in terms of many, many complex factors. There are physiological factors that have to do with that brain function. Levels of enzymes that metabolize proteins into transmitters of signals from one nerve to the next. See, that's a physiological thing. Some people have higher levels of enzymes than others in some areas. And it causes variables in behavior, variables in response. One of the things that is involved is the threshold of pain, threshold of tolerance. Some people feel pain more keenly than others. By the same token, some people feel emotional hurt more easily than others. You see, the level, the threshold of tolerance is a very important word here. If you say, well, this person's more spiritual because they're more tolerant, you're making a mistake. And we all have emotional patterns or brain function that varies. Traits that we are born with, the genetic pattern is so intricate. Do you know if we could take all the genes that make up all the characteristics of all the people in the world on earth living today, if we had a way of containing them, we could put them in a thimble. And yet they alter the pattern of behavior radically in people. You have the DNA molecule and the RNA molecule, which are both important in this consideration because the DNA chain is made up of a composite of the male and the female chromosomes. They come together and they form an interlocking chain, male and female. And the genes are the interlocking units between these two chains of chromosomes, and they form a pattern. Now, the female chromosome or chain, DNA chain, breaks away from the male chain, and a third one is now organized, and that is the RNA, the ribonucleic acid. The RNA chain is formed off of the pattern that has evolved out of these other two chains, is present in every cell of the body. Every cell. In the matter of emotions, for some people, emotions flow freely. Wherever they are, you know, people that are not Christian at all, by any stretch of the imagination. They're always outgoing and always very affectionate and all that sort of thing. They don't even know Christ at all. There are Christian people that are quite conservative in their moods. For them, emotions do not flow freely. They more or less have a habit of or have a trait of controlling emotion. That kind of person probably never gets very high. On the other hand, they also never get very low. Very uncomfortable. I'm one of those types. I'm very uncomfortable in places where there's a lot of ebullience. It just doesn't fit my temperament. Now, some people say, oh, well, that's because you're not very spiritual. If the Lord did you hold your heart, you'd really be like that. That is not a spiritual matter. It is a matter of temperament. And the person who would say, well, we are more spiritual than you because we let go of our emotions more readily, would be totally false, absolutely wrong. Now, there are many ways to praise the Lord, there are many ways to express one's devotion to Christ. They do not have to be letting go of emotions. But what I'm trying to do is help you see it's not a spiritual matter, it's a matter of the psyche, it's a matter of the makeup. There are other areas of control, other areas of human expression that are in the same category. People who have tendency to lose the temper more readily than others. That's a threshold factor, again, of tolerance. And some people have what we call a low boiling point. That is, they tend to flare up more readily than others. Now, if that's a spiritual matter, some people have a decided advantage, and there's a great deal of inequity, because some people that have never touched Christ at all are pretty moderate in temperaments, you see. They've never been Christians, yet they've have genes and traits in them that are moderate. They're more moderate in their temper. They have other problems. We all have these problems. Now, there are things we are born with and things we have acquired. And it isn't so much how we have been changed in feelings as it is how we have learned to cope with the feelings that are there and to find ways to handle them in ways that are the least disturbing to those around us and the most expressive of Christian grace. You see, it's not such a simple matter to say, if you really love Jesus, you'll do this and this and this and this. It's very careless talk. Or unless you feel great emotional things that you haven't had the Spirit, you know, haven't been baptized in the Spirit. That's just very careless talk. Very careless. And it's caused untold distress, agony on the part of great numbers of people. It's easy for the people that like that, you know. It's easy for them to turn to somebody who is of a different temperament and judge them. Because they've got it made, you see. That way to begin with. I'm saying to you that you've got to look at the whole subject of feelings from the perspective of recognizing that feelings are, after all, a part of a mental response, the same that pain and pleasure is, or pain and ease. And I got started, I got sidetracked, and I'm going to still stop quickly, but in the matter of pain, for example, so much happens to that pain, the common illustration of touching a hot iron. You see, when you touch a hot iron, the finger immediately moves back. Immediately. That's a reflex action. Because what has happened is the signal has gone to the spinal column, where all signals ultimately go. The spinal column is this clearing of the central trunk line. And a signal has gone to the spinal column and immediately returned. And that's a reflex action to pull the finger away, or like a blink of the eye when an object comes up. But another signal is triggered in the spinal column, which goes into the cortex of the brain and interprets the whole situation, integrates it, we say, technically. Now comes the question of how much of an injury is it? What do we do about it? Do we get the unguentine? Do we immerse it in the water? Do we ignore it? What is the nature of pain? What is the nature of an iron? All of these things are part of the complex grid in our brain that interprets that pain. Now, you see, the pain is an extremely important thing because it's nature's signal that something's amiss. If we didn't have the pain, well, there are people that don't have it. Young people that are born without proper pain, endorphins and enkephalins, are the pain transmitters. And if they don't have proper levels of these, they may, a child may just leave its finger on a hot stove and be very dangerous. They fall on something hot and don't get up because they don't feel the pain. It's a terrible thing. By the same token, human emotions, you see, in the same way. The pain we feel in human emotions causes us to realize something is amiss and to make some effort to handle it. But there's a reflex action in physical pain, and there is an integrated action. By the same token, there's a reflex action to persons, to situations, to events. And you know, you always have that flash of reflex action of how you think about a thing, your first impressions, for example, your first responses to someone's comment to you or something. These are all almost reflex action. Then you integrate it, and you begin to think it over and say, now, why did I act that way, or should I have acted that way, or whatever, and now you think it all out. See, all these are complex factors, and they don't just get leveled out suddenly by a conversion experience. But by the same token, possessing the Spirit of Christ in us, we have both the motivation and the capacity to look at things from a different perspective and to handle them more properly. But a lot of things that we have relegated to Jesus that he should do, and so we've just left things ride in our relation to others because he hasn't given us the love we need yet. Now we can be whatever we are until he gives us that love. A lot of those things, that may be just a cop-out. Maybe you ought to just behave yourself. And you say, well, I don't want that kind of responsibility. Well, then you don't want friends either. Because you see, becoming a Christian does not require sorting out priorities ahead of time. See? That's not the prerequisite. So your priorities may get in the way of your friendships. Your carelessness about yourself and your relation to others may get in the way of friendships, but it doesn't throw you out of the kingdom of heaven. Now, the Lord wants us always to be kind to people, but the feelings are something that are not that easily handled. And I can tell you from long experience with Christians all over the world, they don't get any different. And the ones that lay these great ethereal trips on you are not doing any better than the people that don't, see? If it was working, it would be different. There are people that hide behind spirituality. For example, a particular person always likes to be classified as very spiritual, yet doesn't take care of his family. Treats his family very poorly. He has a marvelous attitude about material things that they don't mean anything at all, but by the same token, he doesn't provide them for his family either, you know. That kind of an attitude has been the cause of a lot of just irresponsibility on the part of Christian people. Let's just pray.